Hello, and welcome back to Even More News, the first and only news podcast. That's right. That's
true.
That's sticking around, and it's true.
Sticking around because it's true.
Because it's true. Hey, my name's Katie Stoll.
What?
Yeah.
I'm Cody Johnston is my name.
Cody Johnston is his name, folks.
The voice of this.
Co-host of the first
and only
news podcast. Hey, Cody.
What?
And everybody listening.
Why?
Happy National Teachers Appreciation Day, and actually Teachers Appreciation Week to everyone, especially
yeah,
the teachers.
That's great.
I love teachers.
Oh, you
I
love
do.
Teachers?
I love teachers.
Because of what they do?
Because of what they do, because of how they've affected my life and my growth, and, you know, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for all my teachers.
That's probably true of most people.
You know, like, there's teachers in life that aren't, like, actual teachers, but this isn't their day. This is actual teachers.
No, these
teachers.
Are the ones that have decided to spend their lives teaching other people's children.
What, who was your favorite teacher?
I've had a lot of good teachers. Don't know if I would feel comfortable singling out one because they all listen to the podcast.
I doubt that.
A name pops in my head. Mr. Grooms was a very good teacher.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Grooms.
Okay, let's not. he taught humanities mostly and history, and he was kind of loose. He was a storyteller, so he would sort of get into a little away from the book. You know,
sure,
This was in high school, too, so it was public school also, so it's a little, oh, this is exciting. This is, like, a very unique learning experience. It would sort of, tell you offhand stories, and he also directed a lot of our plays.
He sounds great.
He directed our hit production.
Of Les Mis?
Of Les Mis.
Oh, I can't believe you guys did Les Mis in high school. I'm sorry, this has nothing to do with the news, but it just makes me wild. I mean, I'm sure it was adorable.
But you can't
do a good job with Les Mis in high school. You can barely do a good job with it on Broadway. That's not true. Broadway Les Mis is...
I've
never seen it, but
go.
I have to assume it's great. Okay, all of this was just a setup so I could talk about my favorite teachers.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, the first one was Sherry in middle school. I went to an alternative middle school, which was really cool. It was called Orion. I think at least one of you listeners went there because you've reached out to me on Twitter. Sherry taught 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. We were all in one class. And she taught us how to crochet. Mm-hmm. So all year while she was talking, like, we'd circle up and we'd all crochet while we were learning. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the year, we donated our blankets to the children's hospital. We put on this big show, what we all wrote, so we can fundraise money to go to the Holocaust Museum, which was a big trip for us. She was amazing. And then in high school, I also had a really great teacher, Mr. Thurman. Mm-hmm. And he ended up naming his daughter after me.
I'm sorry.
It was maybe too far.
After you?
Yeah. He named her Katie. Yeah. He was old, too. It was wild that he had a daughter. But so there it is.
A child after you?
He really liked me.
That's intense.
It was years later. Maybe it wasn't after
pressure.
Me, but he told my dad. He ran into my dad and told him that. Anyway, that was a lot of talk about teachers.
That's amazing, though. You have a namesake.
I have a namesake. I went a couple years ago. I was home for the holidays, and I was at the Apple store, and I saw him in there, and I didn't want to talk, so I hid. It was just I wasn't in the right mindset to have a catch-up with somebody from 20
that
years
makes sense.
Prior. Speaking of teachers, thanks to the digital community teaching website Skillshare for supporting Even More News. Skillshare is offering Even More News listeners 2 months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. To sign up, go to skillshare.com/news. Today, we're doing things a little differently.
What?
Actually, very differently.
Oh.
We're doing Even More Cues. We asked for your questions online, and we're going to answer them, and we're going to talk about the news as we're answering them. So don't be like, oh, no, I don't want to listen to this episode because it's not the news. We'll cover
it. Oh, it's the news.
Oh, it's all news, baby.
That's exciting. Yeah, if you're not familiar, we do Even More Cues on our Patreon every month.
Yeah.
And this is just a special little, let's get some community questions.
Let's get
and
some
we're
going to
answer
questions.
Some patrons. And
yeah, and it's going to be great.
It's going to be
and
so...
And then afterwards, we're going to talk about Game of Thrones. And it's going to be a good time for us and for you, I hope.
Yeah, if you're fans.
Also, just a heads up, we're not going to have a video next week. We were supposed to shoot this weekend, and we pushed it because we're getting a new backdrop. So when we come back with our next video, studio. We're going to have a whole new look. It's going to be great. And we're going to enjoy this weekend of not shooting.
Yes. Yes. All that's true.
All that's true.
It's going to have a new look, new feel. It'll be the same thing.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to some questions, shall we? This first one comes from Shamus. Any commentary on John Kelly recently signing on to an executive board that makes money off of the border concentration camps? Yeah, well, we do. This is a news story that we would have wanted to talk about.
Yeah, it's one of the things we're going to talk about.
Just in case you guys missed this story, former White House Chief of Staff John Kelly has joined the board of Caliburn International, and that is a company that runs the largest for-profit facility that's housing migrant children. Approximately 2,000 immigrant minors were residing in Homestead as of March 30th. And currently the bed capacity there is being expanded to 3,200. So that's cool. I guess the Homestead contract with the Department of Health and Human Services is worth $220 million.
I want it.
You want it?
Give me.
It's worth a lot of money.
Yeah, I want the money. but I don't want that, what it's related to, weighing on my conscience.
You don't want that.
So maybe not.
It's like blood money. Mm. Daddy's blood money.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's ghoulish is what I think it is. In their filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, apparently it states that Trump's border enforcement and immigration policy is driving significant growth. So basically, they know that there's money to be made here. The other thing that I wanted to point out is that, like a lot of the other places where migrant children are being housed, these are unlicensed facilities as opposed to like orphanages or other kinds of shelters that have oversight. And so there's...
So that's more fun for the kids.
More fun for the kids.
Because they can do whatever they want.
No, actually opposite. More fun for, I guess, the creeps that run the facilities who can abuse the kids. Homestead, in fact, is being investigated for sexual abuse.
I believe you, but... I was trying to have fun.
I know you were, but I needed to get my legitimate
I know, it's news-related awful, facts awful. Out. Yeah, there's a lot of abuse at these facilities, and you always sort of find out after the fact, much, much farther after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
I would posit, though, I agree with you completely, but also, like, what if it's good?
I agree with you completely, but?
Yeah, like, but what if it's good? He put in the time, he was the adult in the room. They got him there to sort of like rein in Trump. And obviously he did. Obviously, honestly, he kept that whole administration in check.
Yeah.
And did a lot of stuff. And now he's done. He's done the job. And, you know, reward him a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't want to continue.
You complained that I was letting you do your bit. And now I'm letting you run
I know. I understand you completely. It's not interesting. It just sucks. It's bad. Like we've talked about for a long time. Even in our big fascism camp series of like when we talk about this and we talk about the kids in camps, we're not saying like concentration camps. We're not saying like, oh, yeah, they're doing the death camp stuff. But like, yeah, work camps and things like that. And this like direction we're heading and the fact like just the fact that someone who is in the administration and the alleged adult in the room who is privy to a lot of information that we're not privy to and a lot of things that the administration will be doing and a lot of things that they're capable of doing. And the fact that his first move is to do this is really, really alarming.
I'm just glad he's got a career after the White House.
Well,
I'm
that's the kidding, thing. He thinks that this is going to be a long and lucrative career. Which means that he thinks that more and more kids will be in camp. He is investing his future in these camps.
And so is the United States government.
Right. So, like, it's the government and the, like, this very responsible man who is the chief of staff is doing this.
Yeah.
And that should really, really put a lot of alarm bells in your brain and then ring them really loudly.
I agree with you completely.
I wonder why he thinks that this is a good move for him.
I wonder why.
It sucks.
I think we know the answer to that. Moving on. This is a more positive question.
Nah, pass.
Sorry, I'm the one reading the questions here. This one comes from Logan Barr. What is the best news story you've read about this past year? He includes, I personally remember hearing about people from Mexico taking parts of the wall for their own homes and to sell. I hadn't heard that story. Thank you for sharing. It was hard for me. I was like, what were the good stories here? I don't know. I think the progress we've made with HIV is a big one for me. I think that's incredible. And then I was kind of Googling, looking for stuff. And then I saw on top of that, when the second person a few months ago had been cured of HIV, second person. So we know it's possible to do that. But there was this 8-year study that monitored the health and activity of almost 1,000 gay couples across Europe, and 0 cases of infection amongst the couples was reported, regardless of the amount of sexual contact. Yeah. So that's really incredible. And then I saw this other cool story, again, as I was just kind of looking for stuff. And it was about this judge who sentenced this group of teenagers who had recently been expelled, and they lashed out. They graffitied an African American like community center with a bunch of racist, hateful shit. And instead of a really harsh sentences, he gave them a year of going through a list of books and writing reports. And, you know, they were from like about the Holocaust, different books on racism. And all of these kids became new people, and they would write about their experience. And that was the hope, was instead of like continuing to create animosity with a really aggressive punishment, like reaching out through education. And one of the kids wrote in one of their essays, "Everybody should be treated with equality, no matter their race or religion or sexual orientation. I will do my best to see to it that I am never this ignorant again." And I thought that was really incredible.
That's amazing.
Not that that's the way we should always deal.
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of true. Like, that's the best way to do that. Even if you talk about extremists who've been like literal neo-Nazis, they talk about how you know, they got out, and more often than not, it's because they actually interacted with people that they hated, or the kinds of people that they hated, and were educated and sort of reached out to. Because that's how, you know, ignorance melts away. That's how racism.
Yeah.
It's I'm not sure if I've
told this story on here, but I at least told it to you personally. My mom shared with me how throughout my grandma's life, she was racist. She was raised in the South. Mm-hmm. Well, she wasn't really. She spent time there and then out here. And then was a housewife. Yeah. And
but every state has a South.
Yeah, but just in case my mom listens, she tells me, you don't know your grandma at all. And then after my grandpa died, my nanny went to work for the first time and worked at a Sears or something. Mm-hmm. And she became best friends with a black woman. And she told my mom, I realized how wrong I was.
Yeah.
I just didn't know anybody. Mm. And as we talk about all of these issues, I think it comes down to personal connection and education. Do you have a story that stands out to you from this year?
Oh, I thought you meant like a story about
grandma.
Well, I like all those stories a lot. I wasn't even going to be like, this is a positive thing. I wanted to talk about the black hole picture. Just because it wasn't even like, oh, this is like a really positive thing for like the world. It was just really cool. And I think a lot of people, and myself included, have sort of lost like that sort of like interest in that kind of thing where, and I think this is more just personal, where like I used to love that stuff and be like write about it all the time and like think about it all the time. No, it's like space is super cool. Scientific progress is super cool and fascinating and inspiring and interesting. And it was just a very cool thing to happen.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is an impossible photograph.
Yeah.
And
it's just awe-inspiring, and puts some perspective.
Yeah, it took me back into a previous mindset that seemed a little more foreign to me.
Yeah.
You know, everybody should look up and think about it every once in a while.
All right, we're going to take another question now. This one comes from McDermott, parentheses, interim superintendent.
Mm.
What is the Some More News crew's take on Mike Gravel as a candidate?
Mm.
Include this one, Cody, because I know you have thoughts.
Yeah, I think it's Gravel. I've been calling him Gravel for a long time because had his first ad was called like The Rock, where he like threw a rock at the lake. It's like, oh, this is a gravel thing.
I mean, it's spelled like gravel.
I know, I agree.
So I apologize, Mike, if you're listening. Mike Gravel.
Or the teens that run his Twitter account.
Or the teens that run his... Yeah, talk to us about him.
Oh, yeah. So
and explain who he is.
Right,
yeah.
If you don't know Mike Gravel, he's a former senator who one of the things he's probably more known for is reading the Pentagon Papers out loud for the record in Congress. And he's basically been pretty far left and specifically like anti-imperialism, anti-war, anti-war on drugs. He's a lot of just very a lot of leftist positions about like prison and incarceration, like all these things. And he's actually ran for president in, I believe, 2008. You can see debates of him next to Hillary and Barack and folks. And he talks about war a lot in those debates. And he's sort of framed as like, it was weird to watch some of them. He's sort of framed as like this wacko. But he's saying really true things. He's just being very passionate and loud about them. Anyway, so he's some teens have convinced him to run for president, not because he thinks he will become the president, but because he wants to be on the debate stage and sort of push the conversation left.
We should check to see how his fundraising is doing, because you have to
raise. You have to get a certain amount. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've wanted to talk about him more in depth, but, you know, it's... Things happen. He's basically going, he's like, I want to be in the debate so I can bring up issues and
right.
push them in a certain direction. And I think that is maybe good.
I agree with you completely, maybe. I mean, he's definitely not the one that you worry about for splitting the vote or something like that. He's somebody
right.
that is there to hopefully just continue to raise really important questions that people that are mainstream pandering to votes might
yeah.
not bring up.
Exactly. And I'm sure there
are issues. If he makes it on the debate stage.
If he makes it there, yeah. And there are issues that candidates aren't going to bring up. There are issues that moderators aren't going to bring up. And people asking questions aren't going to bring up. And he might bring them up.
I'm going to skip ahead to another question because I think it ties in with this.
Mm-hmm.
And this comes from our Patreon. And we answered this on our Patreon Q&A, mm-hmm. but I like the question, so I wanted to bring it up.
Mm-hmm. And it is related to this, yeah.
And Gregory Lotza. Gregory, he says two progressive front runners, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, seem like potentially great candidates. However, both of them have severely problematic views on sex workers. Both voted for FOSTA SESTA, and Warren was one of the senators who introduced a bill to shut down the bank accounts of anyone involved in sex work. Do you believe that they can be made to see the error in this? These laws primarily affect people of color and trans individuals, both groups that both candidates claim to want to help. And as a second question, how can I, as a progressive individual, justify my support of a candidate who has actively attempted slash succeeded in passing laws that can kill friends of mine? Is this simply a matter of lesser evils? I think this is a great question. Obviously, this was a really disappointing bill for everybody, I think,
yeah.
if you haven't paid attention
well,
to the FOSTA SESTA
yeah.
stuff. And we actually have a video coming out, or we're
eventually,
going to eventually. Well, we have
yeah.
a script we're going to shoot on our next batch
yeah.
About this. And I think it's important for us to be talking about it and to see where people land on this throughout. It's one of those questions. That's what made me connected to that.
Right.
That's not likely to make it to the debate stage. So we have to keep raising this issue and making them respond. And I think that both Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are probably the two people most likely to evolve on their positions for this, because it has
right.
already had an incredibly detrimental effect to this on the sex worker community. People have lost their lives.
Yeah. And they respond to that kind of criticism
yeah.
more often than not, in general. So maybe they won't, but they are the most likely. And
yeah.
Because they're not going to bring it up. No one wants to talk about sex workers.
Yeah,
no, no politician is going to go out of their way to be like, by the way, we should talk about sex workers' rights and like what this is doing to their community. Maybe we should legalize sex work. Like, no
yeah.
one is going to do that unless maybe Mike Gravel comes on and says, by the way, here are the reasons
right.
this it should definitely happen. And it's ridiculous that no one is talking about this. And then maybe people will be like, oh, yeah, I guess the reaction, because
yeah.
also it's slightly dependent on the reaction, because most of these people are going to change their position if they feel like the winds are changing on it.
Right.
They're not going to necessarily stand up for what they believe. They're going to stand up for what they perceive others to
right.
believe.
And that's why I think it's really important for us as citizens to keep talking about it.
Yeah.
Share the video when we release it.
Right.
But
right.
truly keep this as a part of the dialogue and something that we don't forget about, because it's so easy to forget about these communities anyway, because they're
yeah.
not in our direct line of vision a lot of the time.
Right. You know? And if you ever have, they do like town halls where like, oh, audience questions, we're going to bring people on.
Yeah, I think they pre-vet those.
Well, I would say ask a reasonable question. And then when they choose you, ask a question about this.
Yeah.
I'm advocating for that. I was like, should I tell
really
them?
That's really scary.
You should totally do that if you have the chance to ask a question of these people.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And in terms of lesser of two evils, I don't know if that's necessarily the best phrase just because it's comparing people who like are actively like.
There's no comparing Elizabeth Warren to Donald Trump.
Right.
But I understand.
In relation to everybody else, for sure. And it is a shame that like there are these issues where like it is bad. This is a bad position that no one holds a good position on.
FOSTA SESTA was intended to stop child trafficking. That was the thrust
of it. Well, that's
the
other thing where like, and we, you know, we're going to get into this in the episode, but like cops, like law enforcement often uses this phrasing and like, oh, it's child trafficking or sex trafficking.
Yeah.
They do that when they're like big busts of things, but like more often than not, there's no sex trafficking. These are like women who are doing this voluntarily and they use it as sort of like a scare tactic.
There is.
Yeah.
And it's an important thing to pinpoint, but
they use it as like this sort of scare phrase.
And that's why this legislation.
To frame everything. Mm-hmm. It frames like sex work in general as like a product of sex trafficking.
Right. And that's what makes this such a difficult topic for them because to deal with because then they become the people that support child trafficking.
Well, right. It's the same thing when like Bernie says like, yeah, everyone should be able to vote even if you're in prison. And they're like, oh, you want like pedophiles and like terrorists to vote? And I was like, I mean, do we need to talk like, why are you framing it like that?
Yeah.
So technically, sure, lesser of two evils, but also it's one of the, like, who else?
Yeah. And again, these are actually people that are more likely, it might not happen before the election,
right,
but they're more likely to evolve their
positions.
That's
the thing. That's the big thing. Because I think, they specifically will have the ability to change their mind
especially
on things. And
if
to listen. Yeah.
We keep bringing it up. Okay, we're going to move on to more Democratic primary stuff.
I do want to, real quick, I just want to point out the phrase, two progressive frontrunners, as being like an actual true phrase.
Yeah, as opposed to Joe Biden, who calls himself the most progressive.
Previous years where it's like, oh, yeah. DNC, the Democratic frontrunner is this fucking person. No, two progressive frontrunners exist.
Okay. Mailer Taylor asks, how do you feel about the number of Democratic presidential candidates? Now we have to worry about 2+ nights of debates so everyone feels special. Mm. Are the Dems shooting themselves in the foot by having too much choice? Follow up, should we fight for ranked choice voting? Thank you for your question, Mailer Taylor. How do I feel about the number? I mean, it's becoming ridiculous for sure. Mm-hmm. Every time a new blah white man announces his candidacy, I get a little irritated. It's like, do you actually think that you have a chance against Elizabeth Warren? Or
you don't want to vote for
Seth
Michael
Moulton?
Bennett?
Nope. Who? Isn't
Josh
he a football player?
Bread. Colin White.
Like, what do they think? What do they think they're doing? What are they advocating for that someone else isn't?
It's because, well, this is the frustrating thing, or one of the many frustrating things. There are too many people, I think. But there are also too many people who know that they have no chance.
Yeah.
And they're doing this because they want to sell books in 2021. Or 2020, depending on how poorly they do. So, like, that is very frustrating, where it's like, there's literally no way you think that you can win. And, like, there's some people who's, like an Andrew Yang or, like, someone like that who are, like, maybe there's a boosting of a profile aspect of it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, okay, you've got, like, unique ideas that you're trying to talk about.
Right,
and
you're
introduce.
Representing something different.
Right. You're bringing something new to the table, whether or not it's going to work or whether or not you think it's going, like, to get you far. But like literally what do you have to offer Michael Bennett that is offered by nobody else?
I agree with you completely. I don't know that we're shooting ourselves in the foot by having too much choice. It's possible. I just don't think that the vast majority of those candidates aren't going to get any traction and it's going to come down to, you know, four people.
Yeah. It's just frustrating because also there are people who like, I mean, I think there are like 3 or 4-ish people in the race who are like, yeah, some you get on the stage and you debate. And then everyone else is kind of noise and it's just, it seems like a frustrating distraction. And yeah, like everyone gets a night, everyone gets another night. That's going to be really obnoxious to people who are bothered by the Democratic Party, you know?
I mean, I'm looking forward to the debates, but it's like, I want to see Bernie and Elizabeth on the same stage, you know, right. I want to see a good pair up of people, and there's a potential for it to be pretty unsatisfying.
I want to see Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden talk to each other.
Yeah, maybe I want that. I think we might be shooting ourselves in the foot by letting Joe stick around.
We don't want to turn this into the let's only complain about Joe Biden podcast, but my God, we could do that every single week.
We probably will. wait, speak on the rake choice part of that question.
Oh, the answer is yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We actually have a video out, which you probably have watched by now.
It's out today.
Because it's out today, meaning yesterday, if you're listening to this today with your ears.
Yeah.
It's about this and sort of things that are wrong with our election process, different solutions to that. Some of, you know, not just a lot of people say like, oh, let's get rid of the Electoral College, which isn't a terrible idea. But things like ranked choice voting are just, I don't even like saying like it's common sense, because that's not really an argument. But like, it's just common sense. There are so many ways to make our voting better. And in a big field like this, ranked choice voting would be very, very helpful, too.
All right. We're going to take a real quick break and then we're going to be back for even more cues.
Speaking of whatever question that was, or answer, whatever it was about, some sort of natural transition to lead into this, you know. Speaking of that, even more news is brought to you by Skillshare, an online learning community with thousands of classes covering dozens of topics, both creative and entrepreneurial.
So, like, photography?
Yes.
But what about...
Whatever you were going to say, yes. Animation?
No, I wasn't going to say
yes, that. Animation indeed is a topic I've explored there. Whether it's something you want to improve on or something you've always wanted to try, you can learn it at Skillshare. It's important to continue learning throughout your life. You know, fill up that tank. You know, get that tune-up. Improve your brain knowing.
Skillshare is easy to use. It's easy to complement. And heck, it's easy to join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for our listeners. Get 2 months of Skillshare for free.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. Skillshare is offering even more news listeners 2 months of unlimited access to thousands of classes for free. To sign up, just go to skillshare.com/news. If you need me to repeat it, just go to skillshare.com/news to start your 2 months now. And if you don't need me to repeat it, well, hey, you're not the boss of me. So skillshare.com/news. All right. This next question comes from Orion, parentheses, he, him, his. Step by step, how do you make an episode? Who does what? How much research? How much rehearsal? Who does graphics, etc.? I want to know partly because I want everyone to know how much work the whole team does. Thanks for your question.
Please go to Skillshare.
Yep.
.com/news.
And we learn.
We learn.
We learn stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming you're talking about the YouTube show. It kind of comes together differently every week, but mostly... We share the work with Dave now. We have him on call, on staff, and he's helping us with some research and writing support. And we try to have meetings and bounce off ideas. But then ultimately it ends up being Cody hunkered down, writing and writing and writing. I'll usually or frequently try to bounce the ideas off of him as well, and we come up with some sort of a
with
list
like a structure
of,
like here are the topics and here's what I'm thinking about the theme, because normally I like to have a and then like, well, you don't need to talk about like many times you're like, well, you don't need to talk about that
right
tangent
sometimes
or whatever.
For Cody he wants to include a lot of stuff, and we do anyway, but it's easy for it to start to balloon and be like, okay, let's take that and make it its own thing and put a pin in it for now.
Right. That's why I like their 30-minute episodes instead of 45-minute episodes.
Usually. And then Cody writes and writes and writes, usually right up overnight before we shoot. And I get the script and I go through and give my notes. Usually it comes down to Cody reading it out loud once.
And I read it out loud once.
Before everyone shows up. And
maybe I'll change a thing.
Yeah.
I'll check the news again real quick to see if there's anything relevant
breaking
that happened that I can fit in.
Yeah.
That happens a lot.
It does.
Sometimes to the point where I'm like, I am so glad I checked my phone.
I know.
Because then it's like, oh, I'm literally talking about this right now. And here's this, or, you know, things that have happened over many weeks.
Yeah.
And then like, now enough time has passed. I can talk about this. I'm like, oh, it's back.
But then everybody shows up on the day. By every day, I mean our DP.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I kind of co-direct it in that we both shout out when we're like, try this again, yeah. try this different inflection.
You keep saying, Jerusalem, say it like a real person.
Yeah. yeah. He helps out. And we have our editor show up. And so then he takes the files, and we'll usually shoot two episodes at once.
Yeah. And we'll take notes and things. Cause mm-hmm. also sometimes there are moments where it's like, okay, well, we can add a cut here, or like, I want to cut it here. So let's do one of those bumper transitions
yeah,
with words.
Yeah, so he takes notes on those.
I'll come up with, you know, we'll come
and
up
I
with
should
a phrase.
Say that a lot of times when we have a bumper in there, it's because we don't want to reset super far back. Yeah. And
sometimes they're written like ahead of time, like, I want this response to this thing I'm saying. And sometimes it's like,
well, we can add one here.
We can seam that together.
And then
he'll also take notes on swears.
Yes. So we can bleep those out. And then after they leave.
For our listeners' delicate ears.
Yeah. For our advertisers' mm-hmm. delicate ears.
Ah, yes.
And then after they leave, Cody and I then sit down and go through the script, and we put placeholders everywhere we think there should be a graphic. Mm-hmm. And we get that off and filled out. And mm-hmm. we get that to the. To our guy,
to the editor,
Clint,
and to the editor, and our graphics,
and he starts doing the graphics. Out. And then day or two later, we get the cut, we get the graphics,
yeah.
and then Cody.
Sometimes it's that night, sometimes it's the next day, sometimes it's 2 days.
Now we're splitting hairs. Really nobody know, cares yeah. about that specifics.
Yeah.
And then Cody goes through and does the final edit where he makes sure all the graphics are in place.
Yeah, or like I'll come up with new graphics, or like, yeah. oh, I wanted this. Sometimes it'll be like in the script, like this. But like what it really is like, no, there's a specific study that I yeah. just want to go find, and I'll find the part that I want to show yeah. and things like that. And then, yeah, tighten up the edit and
yeah.
adjust that.
So it takes about 3 or 4 days mm-hmm. to get it all together, yeah. I'd say.
Yeah, especially for like the ones that are like, this is the timely one about what just happened.
Yeah.
And not like... Here's a broader topic that we're going to explore yeah. a little bit, like the death of boars.
right.
That should be coming, not the actual death of boars.
This is another question from Orion, he, him, his. You were frustrated that Ted Lieu didn't do more than play the video of her, meaning Candace Owens, saying Hitler was fine. What else should he have done? What more do you want? That's sincere, though just phrased in a form of a sarcastic question.
What more do you want?
I like Cody.
So my issue with the Ted Lieu thing is that it's fine that he showed the clip. I think that was good. It's good that those words were played, especially in the context of the hearing and like why she was there. But my issue mainly is that people like Candace Owens, people, these sort of like grifting, like dishonest people who are doing this weird ahistorical stuff, all the stuff they're doing, they are very well versed in framing their own words dishonestly mm-hmm. and responding to things in Candace's case with just outrage that's like framed as if like, you're taking me out of context, all this sort of stuff.
And then didn't follow up really.
Right. So like what he did was... It's presenting it like, here's her in her own words. Okay, you do her own words, but then she gets to respond, and then that's it.
Right.
It's important when you're doing that, especially with people who are so dishonest, that
you have to be really specific.
Play the words and explain why. Yes. Like, because she was able to deflect it and say, like, the fucking crazy thing was like, you think all black people are dumb now?
yeah.
yeah. That's what he said, Candace. But framing it like I was actually talking about this and like you took it out of context and this and this. It's important to explain why she was wrong, even in the context of yeah. the question, because she was and she was really wrong, even in the context of the question.
I think it's an important example to point to and look at in how our members of Congress and the Senate need to study the right way to question these people.
Right.
Especially if we're going to be having, you know, Barr in front
right.
testifying, like if we ever do, you know, currently that's a whole thing.
Yeah.
But if we're going to be effective, you need to ask effective questions. It's not that his heart wasn't in the right place, but it's not good enough. And
right,
I think
right.
is the point.
And I think, and there is an element to, I think, Ted Lieu and some people who are like, to me, showing the clip and being like, I don't know anything about her, I'm just going to let her speak her own words. Show right. the clip. Now you respond. That to me is just a dunk on Twitter.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing. And he does that on Twitter a lot. He's a very active Twitter user. He likes to do the dunks and stuff. But sometimes it's a little, not dishonest, but like
yeah.
not effective and not framing it in an yeah. effective way. And when you're just like, ah, I dunked on you, Candace. And then she's like, well, actually this. And then he's done.
Yeah.
And I think it's a sort of ineffective way to go about it. And in the future, it would be great if he was like, I don't know much about her, but I've studied her since then. And I know how she would respond to something like this. So I'm going to explain it a little more.
Matt G asks, what do you guys think about Hillary asking China to find Trump's tax returns? I think it's dumb. She wasn't being serious with that, from what I understand, unless she's asked it several times. I believe it was on MSNBC, and she was doing an interview, and she said, this is a hypothetical. Let's say that I'm a hypothetical Democratic candidate running for election, and I ask China to get Donald Trump's tax returns, and she was making a point.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I think it was really stupid.
I didn't even hear about this.
Oh, you didn't?
This, like, slipped by my radar.
My eyes almost got stuck because I rolled them so hard.
Yeah. I mean, that's silly. That's like, you know, that seems like, again, like just a Twitter dunk, but in the real world. But I'm reading about it now, and literally her first word is imagine that you had one. It was like, okay, so she said something. Like, this is something that people have been saying for literally years. Like, imagine if Obama did this. Imagine if this person did this.
But it's kind of like,
imagine Clinton's presidency and she bans mutt. Like, it's all the same.
I would say what we don't need is Hillary Clinton talking about this stuff right now. You know?
Sure, that's fine. But, like, did anybody cared about this or is framing it like, I can't believe she did this, or like, Hillary did this. No,
but a lot of people were talking about it.
That's nuts to me. But okay.
Anyway, just wanted to bring that one up.
Yeah, I didn't even know I needed an opinion about this.
Let's do another one from Patreon. This is from Shelley B. What are your opinions on term limits for Congress? How many terms should they serve? How do you think that'll affect internal structure of panels? Do you think it would help with corruption or make it worse? Well, Congress already has pretty short term limits, I know, but their terms are really short.
Right.
So I wouldn't say only two for Congress.
The House and Senate would be different, probably.
Yes, House would be something different.
Or we just abolish the Senate, whatever.
I'm for them.
Yeah, I don't know the number.
How do it affect internal structure of panels? You mean like the different committees, I'm assuming, and whatnot. And I don't think that it can hurt it. I think that you have a place, you have an understanding that this is how long that I'm going to be in here. And so we actually groom people that are ready to pick up the torch.
Yeah, I think there's value, obviously, in like, okay, well, I've been here for many, many terms and I know how things go and I can help things go smoothly and so on. But there is this sort of weird gatekeeping aspect of it. And like, even like what you just said of like, yeah, you're grooming this person. I mean, that
is inherently bad.
Inherently bad. It's just like invokes this like idea of succession.
Which I hate.
You know?
And I don't mean grooming. I just mean people.
I know you
have
mean,
people,
like,
and hopefully then they're elected within the committee for who would take the next leadership role or whatnot. But I just mean people obviously need to learn something before they're leading a committee. But I do think it would help corruption. I think. I guess there is the argument that those people would expect to have a career after serving, and in which case they might be developing relationships while they're there, but they're doing that anyway.
Like, what if they do a bunch of stuff and then like, I want to work at the kid camp company?
Yeah. Kind of like that example we discussed earlier.
Kind of exactly like that. And also, like, I think that term limits would be good because obviously people more often than not are thinking about making sure they get another term and being there forever. But at the same time, I don't think that that wouldn't be the first thing,
right,
to solve this problem. Like, because I think this is a solution or a part of a solution to just an existing problem of like Congress, just Congress in general. And I don't think that term limits are like the first thing that would help solve it.
Mm-hmm.
I think money is the main issue.
Yeah.
And once you solve that, then a lot of the things that cause the problems from like the fact that there are no term limits would slowly dissolve, I think, if you got rid of these other aspects a fair like platform for any representatives who want to or people who want to run, all that kind of stuff.
I agree with you completely about that. But counterpoint, even outside of corruption, I think it's in our best interest because then we have people with fresh ideas and mm-hmm. more people feel like they have a chance of getting there and they would set their sights on it because of especially for us living in a progressive district in a progressive state, it's very difficult to get somebody new in.
For sure.
And just because we've got somebody that's a Democrat already doesn't mean that we don't need somebody that's even more liberal or has different ideas.
Primary incumbents also.
Yeah, definitely.
And support that idea and don't be fearful of criticizing candidates.
Yeah.
Not against them at all. Very for them, but don't think it's, the first.
All right. Monica Hart asks, how are some ways you guys avoid becoming burnt out? If it's all so overwhelming and frustrating and you made it your livelihood, how do you deal with that? Some weeks we decide to do questions from our listeners. Mm. That's one way we deal with it. I try to breathe. I don't know. I try to stay healthy and like spend time with my friends and family and get out of town. And when I'm not doing the news, I shut it down. Mm-hmm. I give myself like usually the weekends I try to really avoid going on. And I think that we have to be okay with that. I think you have to listen to yourself because it's easy to get caught up in, I really need to pay attention because we do, and lose sight of the fact that you also need to take care of yourself. So if you are reading the news and getting and feeling your blood pressure spike every day, I beg you to just take a step back sometimes and go outside and enjoy nature while we have it. Play with your friends' babies or your own kids, maybe. I don't know if you have them. It's just really, really important to remind yourself of all the beautiful things that we have in our life. Read good news stories like we talked about at the top.
Yeah.
Cody, you're not as good at this as I am.
No. I agree with you completely.
Are you okay?
I agree with that question completely. I'm fine. I am worse at it, turning it off. And not thinking about it. One thing, I play music, and I think that helps, because that does shut it off for me. It's very hard, like even like watching, like we're going to talk about Game of Thrones in a little bit, we're even watching TV or watching a movie, I'm still like in my head, I'm like kind of away, like I'm not fully engrossed in whatever I'm watching. But when I'm playing music, then it's out of my mind completely. For many hours. And so that is very valuable to me. And also recognizing that you can get burnt out or that you are burning out, which I'm also not good at, but slowly getting better at just being like, you know what? I can't.
Until
I'm not going to.
Recognizing
right now.
The warning signs before it becomes something bigger than it needs to be in you physically, emotionally, whatever it is, a breakdown of some sort.
And knowing that there needs to be some sort of break.
And I just think it's really, really, it's just as important, if not more important. You had to pay attention to the news, but you have to listen to your body's cues.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a little slow.
Aw.
Hey,
even
put that
more
on
of your
t-shirt.
Body's cues.
And one last question that will transition us into our Game of Thrones talk. I was just going to say GOT, so it became Game of Thrones.
Yeah, got.
Brian Hartney asks, do you two watch GOT together? And what was Katie's reaction to Arya and Gendry sparring? We do not watch GOT together.
Mm-mm.
We do not. We have in the past.
We have in the past.
But we don't this season.
We don't this season.
Usually it's because Cody's such a slow poke about it. Things.
I mean, you have friends over.
I have had friends over.
You have viewing parties.
The last 2 weeks I have not because I refuse anymore. I love my friends too much to get mad at them while they interrupt my Game of Thrones and viewing experience. I was going to this weekend, but I backed out. But also, I usually want to watch it pretty quickly.
Yeah, you want to watch right away.
And Cody's doesn't mind spoilers, I guess.
I just don't go on
Twitter. You can't help but see something that you see.
I can.
Oh, what a special skill you have. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that by sparring you mean fucking.
Gotta be, right?
I'm going to say this. I don't really buy their chemistry, I guess, is the thing. Just like we're going to talk about it on the end of this show if you guys stick around. I don't buy Danny and John's chemistry either.
Mm-hmm.
Deeply, deeply don't. It's a problem. But I guess it's fine. I'm glad she got some, you know.
Yeah.
She's very powerful in her ownership of her body and her choices, and I think that's cool. She does look young, but she's over 18 in the world of the show. So.
Yeah.
Also, they don't have the same laws, but.
Right. Yeah, that's all true. I agree with all of that. It really came out of the blue, and I apologize for that choice of words.
Okay.
I don't actually apologize. Like, we talked about this a little bit at the beginning.
Come out of the blue. They've been building it.
It's been a friendship and, like, a love, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, horny Arya was like, what?
Yeah, that,
that
I
was a very foreign, like, thing to watch.
Yeah.
And it was, like, I think, like, the first time she's ever been portrayed as having any sexual thought ever.
It was hard to wrap your mind. I think she did a good job, but it's hard to wrap your mind around the actress.
Right.
But it's hard to wrap your mind around that now. It's like, really, now there's a lot of things going on right here to focus on.
And, like, I get the whole aspect, and, like, it was even mentioned to Gendry in this episode of, like, yeah, the dead are dead, you're alive. And, like, I get that, and, like, I get the impulse of, like, right before the big battle of, like, I want to find out what fucking is like. And but the fact that it was season 8, the first time we've ever seen her have a sexual thought, was like, okay, I guess we're doing this now.
Yeah.
So, like, the idea of them getting together didn't super bother me. It was just, like, the execution of it and, like,
kind of feels like fan service, I think.
That's fair. I will say one thing about the idea of fan service, especially in this season. I see that a lot. Like, this is just fan service. This is fan service. Sometimes fan service is just doing what the story dictates or this, like...
Yeah, but like you just said, not in this situation.
Not in this situation. But like certain things, it's like, that's just for the fans. Well, no, if you do a show where like 7 seasons, it's clear that the story is leading down a certain road, and then you do that, that's just how the story goes. Because fans predicted it or like caught your foreshadowing doesn't mean that it's fan service.
Right.
It means you effectively foreshadowed something.
Okay, well, that ends the even more cues.
I'm pretty sure that was about Game of Thrones.
It was, but it was a question, and now we were using it to transition into the Game of Thrones portion. If you do not watch Game of Thrones, get on out of here. I hope you got on out of here before we answered that question. If you love Game of Thrones, well, you're in luck, because we are going to talk about Game of Thrones right now. Also, we love you very much. Okay, let's talk Game of Thrones. Episode 4 was on Sunday, The Last of the Starks. Kind of a mixed bag of an episode for me, but
that's fair.
All will come to light as we go through this.
All will come to the Lord of Light.
All will come to the Lord of Light. We started off with the funeral service for all of our fallen heroes, with a big funeral pyre.
Good riddance.
Good riddance to them, you know, kill them off.
That little girl. Yeah. The other hero, the other guy.
You mean
Lyanna
Mormont? All of them. It was emotional, and I guess this was nice. It's hard to transition out of that battle episode back to the plot.
Yeah, well, like this is an issue I think the show has kind of in general, but like it's very apparent now where we just saw them die. We've experienced that, and now you're like, all right, well, let's like cover that again real quick,
right?
And do like the emotional thing that we already kind of did, and then we're gonna start it off.
I guess we didn't need it, but it was nice to see. I guess
it's also kind of necessary, just in terms of like, we just experienced this,
and we see Jon stepping in as the leader. I mean, he's been a leader, but you know, giving his speech. It was a good speech. A lot of people making fun of Kit Harington's voice in that speech.
I just want really?
To address it because it was deeper or something. And so I paid attention on the rewatch and y'all are crazy. He's projecting. Have you guys ever tried to speak outside in like a windy area to hundreds of people? No, you gotta add some muscle to it. Otherwise you're just shouting and his voice would get, and take after take, you would get wrecked. So just from a practical standpoint, back down
because as an actor, he couldn't
stand down.
That's interesting. I didn't hear anybody complain about that.
Yeah.
But I did laugh quietly at one point during his speech because of how he sounded.
You did.
It wasn't because he was like, oh, it's too deep or too loud or like whatever. It was just like, sometimes the way Jon talks is funny to me because he's doing the, you know, I'm Jon, like he's just doing the intense, dramatic Jon Snow hero sort of thing. And sometimes I step back and I'm like, oh, you're an actor playing pretend.
Right.
This is very silly.
It's not.
But
hard disagree. That's not what's silly. Also, I couldn't help but think of how bad it must smell for miles around. That can't be healthy. All those bodies being burnt. Anywho, that happened. And then it was time to party, I guess. Everyone comes together for a feast. It makes sense. They deserve to eat some food and to celebrate being alive. Gendry and the Hound have an interesting little exchange, mm-hmm. Which kind of justifies the whole thing. I mean, justifies, but of this celebration
it, yeah.
of being basically they're dead and you're not.
Right.
And as he goes looking for Arya, Danny pulls him aside and legitimizes him, gives him the name of Baratheon and tells him he can be the Lord of Storm's End. It was smart. A little move from Danny, you know,
mm-hmm.
the alliances.
Yeah.
Sansa did not like it.
I mean, because it's so transparent.
Because it was
it's so transparent. Danny's usually a little slyer than that.
Yeah. Not this time.
Not that she literally leaned over to Tyrion's like, see what I can do?
Yeah.
Look at me being manipulative. It's very funny.
So the party ramps up. It continues to become very debaucherous. Mm-hmm. It almost becomes some sort of orgy, it seems.
I mean,
like
everyone's just like
hooking up, making new babies.
Yeah, making new babies. I'm not like, oh, I can't believe they did this. There's a lot of people being like, no, you drink more.
Yeah.
Drink more.
Yeah.
And like pouring alcohol into people's
awful.
Cups. And it's like, what if they don't want to get
yeah.
as drunk as
well,
you?
Well, like with Brienne.
My God, you freaking weird
yeah.
enablers. My God, what are you trying to do?
Yeah.
And I know what they're trying to do, but.
But, yeah. But Jaime convinces Brienne to get wasted. Mm-hmm. You know, they're eventually joined by others and, you know, they're playing drinking games.
Mm-hmm.
Tyrion takes it too far. And really does not pick up the cues that he's asking a very uncomfortable question and says that she has never had sex mm-hmm. before. And Brienne leaves the room. Jaime follows. Tormund has his heart broken briefly mm-hmm. because of this exchange.
Then he gets better because he'll be fine.
He'll be fine. We'll come back around to that later.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have this scene with Davos and Tyrion discussing Melisandre and the Lord of Light. And I'm going to use this as an example of a criticism that I have with the show. Yeah, I love Davos. What was the point of this? We have very limited time left. Mm-hmm. And it's so bizarre to me, some of the things they choose
yeah.
to include and then just speed really quickly through other stuff. Huge chunks and leaps that we're supposed to make that we really could have seen later on in the episode. I'll pinpoint it when we get mm-hmm. to that. It's like, well, we could have seen that on screen. And
yeah.
and yet you wasted a solid 4 minutes going through this conversation that it's strange to me I don't see how that is important. Anyway, lots of little interesting scenes during this party stuff, you know, Bran saying, you shouldn't envy me. I mostly live in the past. Profound.
Sure.
But whatever. but I think the big takeaway in a lot of these.
Good reaction to just Bran in general. Profound, but like whatever.
You know, Sansa doesn't like the way that Dany looks at Jon, but Dany doesn't like the way that everyone looks at Jon.
Ooh.
And I think that's important to mm-hmm. note, obviously, because then we have a scene with them a little bit later where Danny goes to Jon and begs him not to tell anyone about being
yeah.
Aegon Targaryen because obviously people will want him to be the king. Mm-hmm. She also tells Jon that she loves him. Now, I mentioned this in the Even More Cues portion, but bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're supposed to believe that because
mm-hmm.
that's the way it's written.
Right, because that's
but
what
they
it's
have
supposed to be.
Absolutely zero chemistry. And I don't know if that's because the actors don't have chemistry or if it's because they finally met last season and these seasons have been completely rushed. So we haven't had time to build it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't seem natural together.
Yeah.
And I still can't tell if she actually does love him or if that's some sort of manipulation.
Yeah.
And I think we're supposed to believe that she does love him, but it never sits right with me.
It is interesting that she chose this particular scene to tell him
right.
that she loves him. The scene where she begs him to not tell a secret right. that would take away the one thing, the one thing, the one thing she wants and needs. Maybe it's just a coincidence that she chose that time to do it.
I'll tell you what's probably not a coincidence is that she sounds eerily like her brother right before her brother died.
Interesting.
When her brother was complaining about how nobody ever looks at him the way they look at Danny.
Interesting.
Interesting indeed. We also get...
But it's her destiny, Katie.
It's her destiny. Yeah, more on that later. Mm. This Sansa Clegane, the Hound... moment. I like these two characters together. I think it's interesting. Also, as I was watching, I know that I've brought this up. I brought up the Hound's arc before and how Arya really changed him. And I think that that's true. But then I remembered what last night it really started with Sansa because he truly wanted to protect her
yes.
in the throes of all of that. Mm-hmm. He was escaping and he was going to save her. And he basically said, you've changed, little bird. None of this terrible stuff would have happened if you'd left King's Landing with me. And Sansa replied, without Littlefinger and Ramsay and all the rest, I would have stayed a little bird all my life. And we're going to talk about this moment, as promised online. A lot of pushback on this. From both sides, people are very divided about this moment.
They're very divided.
I think it kind of sucked. I mean, and I understand. I think that there's that a woman can have power, it can own her terrible experiences and grow from them. But in this show, it's important to remember that there was a lot of pushback on the brutality of Sansa's rape and abuse, and this really kind of felt like a moment that the show was like giving a little pushback on that criticism.
Right. It was less the characters saying it and more the writers saying it.
Also, it's pretty demeaning if you think about it that this strong, powerful, really intelligent character wouldn't have grown into herself if she hadn't had all this trauma.
Right.
Sansa would have become a grown up from being an adult watching what's happening without needing to be abused.
Right. There have been other strong women and men similar to her who weren't abused and raped, and they arrived that way, like, not because of that.
And it's not to say that even... I understand the morality of the show. Like, it's not even just say that these scenes, I needed to have them gone, maybe done a little differently. They need to be as brutal, but or commenting on the world. Like, this world is different from ours.
Yeah.
But you have an opportunity here to make a better choice in the moment and to make a stronger statement. And again, not to take away from the fact that she did grow and she's taken ownership over her bad experiences and she seems to be okay. And that's great. And so any survivors out there that really related to this moment, that's wonderful. It left a slightly bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I think, well, I've seen, like you said, like more nuanced takes on it of, from the perspective of someone who's been abused and, taking ownership of like, what led you to where you are and sort of that. And that's true. I think that might be a little too charitable to the showrunners because it does remove that moment from the context of the criticism, like the very vocal criticism of the show about that. And maybe she would have said something similar if no one cared earlier, but it did seem a little pointed. It kind of reminds me of the opposite of that. There's this trope called fridging that's like, it's more prominent in like comic books and stuff, but like a female character is like abused and attacked in a kind of a gruesome way. And that is motivation for the male character to like move the story forward, you know? And it's sort of like, just like overly abusive treatment of a woman in order for a man to like take control and like go do a thing. And this seems like a cousin of that,
right?
Where it's like she needed this gruesome thing in order to have her move the story forward.
I will say that it seemed to be a good moment for Clegane, Like, mm-hmm. he seemed to find a little bit of peace from it, mm-hmm. Which is good, but also who cares? It's her, her terrible story.
But I think Sansa's great in general.
Yeah.
And I hope that Dany doesn't kill her.
Then Gendry finds Arya, who's shooting some arrows, tells her his cool news.
I was so embarrassed.
Asks her to marry him. Be the Lady of Storm's End. Made you cringe?
It made me cringe the whole time. Like, oh, buddy. I literally, because I was watching it alone, and I literally out loud was like, Gendry, don't.
Don't.
No. I think I said, oh, buddy, no.
You're ruining it.
Oh, God.
There was a split second where I was like, how is she going to respond? Because she did look at him with so much love.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, we know exactly. I mean, this is such a great callback to season one when she had this conversation with her father, Ned, and said, I'm not a lady.
Yeah.
I've never have been. That's not me. Yeah, it was pretty painful. Also painful to me was this Jaime and Brienne hookup scene. And I know that some of you guys will not agree with me, but it does seem strange to me, especially when you look at where it ended up.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we might as well just say that now. So they fuck, they have this nice moment, and then at the end of the episode, towards the end of the episode, after they get news of the attack on Dany's fleet and that one of the dragons has died, Jaime rushes off to King's Landing, presumably to fight for Cersei. It's unclear.
I don't think so.
You don't think so, but he also doesn't say anything. He makes his case like, I've done all of these terrible things for Cersei. I'm not a good man. And he doesn't give Brienne anything else and just leaves her literally weeping. And so it was very confusing.
It was confusing, but I think that, so like...
I know, he's probably not going to do the thing, because it's very bizarre to have a total reversal of everything we've built up over the last many seasons.
Yeah, no, there's no, like, I know people have various reactions to this, and a lot of people were kind of upset, and like, oh, they're doing this. I just don't buy that he's going to, like, help her or save her or, like, be with her.
But the way he's treated Brienne in this moment is pretty cruel.
Yes. But I think that is because they want us to think it's ambiguous. The showrunners want us to be like, is Jaime going back? And so they wrote that scene vaguely for us.
I get it.
I think without thinking, like, oh, he's being a piece of crap to her.
A weird, awkward, bad choice.
No, I don't disagree. I agree.
I know we need an incentive for Jaime to get back there to move the plot forward. This felt clunky and strange, and it kind of tarnishes what the beautiful moment we just had when he knighted her.
Well, it was clunky and strange because what he should have done is do exactly what he did, but say, I'm going to kill my sister.
Exactly.
And make it clear to Brienne that everything that happened was genuine and real.
Yes.
And he felt all those things because obviously he did.
Yeah.
And make it clear, like, I'm saying goodbye because I might die, but I'm going to go try to kill my sister.
And
because that's obviously what he's doing.
But I also will say that it did. I know that a lot of people were shipping Bran and Jaime.
Sure.
I was disappointed. I thought you might be.
Yeah.
I think it's more interesting for their love to be of a different nature.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that provides an interesting catalyst for introspection for the character, as because literally only having been with Cersei his entire life up until this moment. I understand that. It just was a bit disappointing to me. Also, there was an interesting interview with Nikolai Coster-Waldau. Is that how I pronounce it?
I think you did a great job.
About how, and again, coming back to this thing that I'm going to probably be saying every episode until this is over, how they are, I mean, he's not saying this, I'm putting this on it, but how they've shot themselves in the foot by not only, I mean, the show at least deserves 10 seasons, but even if you're not going to do 10 seasons, because I understand that's difficult, don't make it a 6-episode season.
Yeah, no, they've messed up by presenting it like this.
Because the show used to be something that allowed moments time to breathe and time for,
I mean, it used to take half a season to get from one place to another,
and you know, and now things happen instantaneously and there's no room for us to see a character arc. So this interview, he talks about having to do so much work connecting.
In that one episode. Right?
But for this season especially, right. Connecting the dots for your character. So like, how do I go from point A to point B in a way that makes sense and having to do all of that work off camera?
Because Jamie has made a lot of choices of a lot of people this season. He's probably made the most that affect his life and his future.
Yeah.
You need to have reasons to make choices. They need to be informed.
And then we have our war planning meeting. Danny wants to just come in, guns a-blazing, lay waste to the city. Her advisors...
Drag guns a-blazing.
Thank you. Very good. That's why we pay you the big bucks. Her advisors push for a siege instead, which is basically like cutting off food supplies so that everyone starves, and that's better. I guess. Just starve everybody.
Yeah. It's for their own good.
And maybe. Like, listen, I'm not advocating for someone to go dragons a-blazing, but interesting to note, if Danny hadn't listened to them in the first place and had just gone to King's Landing, the war would be over and all of her friends would not be dead.
Are you sure about that?
No. I'm not positive.
The dragons get shot?
Yeah, but now this time that's passed, they used to have that like janky little crossbow that didn't really do much.
Oh, you mean like long ago?
Long ago. Okay. Originally, okay. Way back when. Yeah, just yeah, like yeah, yeah. Olenna Tyrell had said to her, she had said, Tyrion's a clever man, but don't listen to the men, you know? And like Missandei said to her over and over, like, you've got advisors that you advise, but when you follow your instincts, that's usually what is the right choice. I'm just bringing that up because if she had done it, not that I'm advocating for that, but like would be in a very different situation than we are now. Also in this scene, Sansa makes the case that the Northerners need time to rest and recuperate. Mm-hmm. And she is right. That is a crazy thing to say. Like, we've just battled for
the
our
dead.
Lives and have been prepping for this for forever. And now we need to march for weeks to King's Landing and have a
bonkers,
whole other battle. And Dany should have listened because the other...
Well, no, she wants it now.
She wants it now, but her dragon was wounded.
Katie, she wants it now.
But her dragon was wounded.
But she wants it now.
And look what happened. Look what happened.
Well,
but
she's...
she wants it now, wants Daddy. It's my chocolate factory. Yeah, I want it now. Veruca salting
the earth.
Exactly.
All right.
John and Davos head down the King's Road with the army, and the rest go to Dragonstone via boat. Jamie briefly stays at Winterfell. But after this meeting, Sansa and Arya ask John for a word. And then we get seen outside the Weirwood tree.
And Sansa, she lasted like an hour.
Well, let's get to that. Jump the gun. All we have to say what happens. You guys
all
know.
If you were listening, you know what happens.
We know,
but
let me set it up first.
All right.
And they confront him, and he eventually, he makes them promise to keep a secret.
Right.
What are we, 12?
But like also like John, like literally everyone you love and trust is telling you that this person isn't so great.
I know, but he is. I was glad that Arya was like, I understand. We did need her. Mm-hmm. I liked that she backed him up. But also you have to understand that we don't trust her.
All right.
And then, you know, there's this whole thing. You're our family. You're our brother. And he has to tell them. And but then he doesn't. He lets Bran do it. And they cut away.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that bothers me. And I know other people, it bothers them as well. Again, we have that scene with Davos. We don't get to see your family react to this news.
Yeah.
I think that's bonkers. Bonkers choice. Maybe it was a bad scene and they're like, ooh, we can't show this.
Right. Well, some of it. So I agree with you mostly.
Okay.
Maybe even completely. It is weird and it is depriving the audience of moments like that where it's like, well, that would have been good to see. But I also think that when there's in shows like this that have like mystery aspects of it, I'm going to come back to Lost again. There are pieces of information sometimes that the audience has known for years. And then a character finds out about that information and they're like, oh, that's now I know that. And then they keep it from other characters. And then it slips to one of the characters. And then over, you know, a season, then they're like, well, now it's time to tell them. It's time to tell the person the thing. And they do that. And at a certain point, it's like, I, the audience, have seen this information relayed to other characters many times before. I don't think that that's the case here because it's his family. And like,
it's
there's
the first it's, time.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I mean, but we've...
No, I mean, it's the first time somebody, like, John's been told this information, and, like, he had that conversation with me, but this is the first time we're seeing somebody learn that hasn't already been in the know.
Sure, sure.
And
I think if they did it now, that would have been fine, but eventually they would have had been like, let's just not, now everybody knows, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of like what that one line Varys said of, like, well, now that...
It's not a secret anymore. It's information.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's because he told it to Arya and Sansa.
I know. I agree with you completely, Katie.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Not agree with me somewhat. Anyway, he's made her promise, and then she immediately tells Tyrion, like you said, an hour. and she says, what if there's someone else better? And we don't see him getting the information either. That's okay in that situation. I'm like, whatever.
That's
on
very
that
obvious. Yeah,
very
yeah,
different
yeah.
situation. Yeah. Again, I mean... It's a good scene. Everything's just so rushed.
Right. And like, you know, yeah, if there was a few extra episodes or like an extra season, you'd get that where like Arya or Sansa's like, you'll always be our brother.
Whatever it
not.
Is.
Like, whatever.
Well,
bullshit,
it's just like,
know?
I guess we're supposed to be surprised as to how they react, except we're not. So we immediately find out that Sansa thinks Jon should be king. And we don't really know what happens with Arya, except that she's heading to King's Landing.
Right.
So... We don't know
with her best friend.
With her best friend. That's great. We're going to get to that in a second. Anyway, so that was my beef with that.
Yeah.
Then we have Jaime and Tyrion chatting up before Tyrion leaves. And then Bronn shows up. Again, another strange forced scene to me. I guess it's important. I love Bronn. I don't mind him being around. I have to walk back my prediction from before, although maybe it still will. If you guys remember, I'd said maybe Bronn kills Tyrion and that's what drives Jaime to kill Cersei. I only said that because it seemed like everybody was going to be dying in the big Winterfell battle, and I was throwing out a theory. This does seem in line with him, his, you know, that he would show up and demand, hedge his bets and say, like, Highgarden.
Right.
But they do. They offer him Highgarden, and then he's gone. Highgarden is a huge get.
It's a big get, yeah.
It doesn't make sense that Bronn would have it.
I mean, he's not going to.
No, he's not.
Like, that's the thing. Like,
so maybe he still will kill one of them. I don't know. He's very angry.
He's still going to get the choice.
Yeah.
That's like, he could have killed, like, oh, I actually want more money. No, you just don't want to kill them.
Yeah.
You're like, he'll have the decision of killing Tyrion or not killing Tyrion, and he'll choose not to, and it won't be about money. Probably. Because he totally could have killed them and gotten River Run, and like,
except that what likelihood is she of
sure
following through with?
But
that?
Like, but you know what
but
I'm saying?
Yes,
like,
I do.
He, you know, he had his opportunity; he didn't take it, and that's very telling.
And then, yes, as you mentioned, the Hound leaves for King's Landing. Arya rides up beside him, and it's maybe my favorite little scene of the episode because I love this duo. I love that they're going to go back. She'll probably. I mean, they'll have each other's backs.
Oh, she'll help him kill the mountain.
Yeah. You know, they both have unfinished business and they neither plan on coming back.
Yeah. Both got, you know, big mountains to climb.
That,
right?
Oh, yeah, they do. Presumably she's heading to kill Cersei.
Right.
So look forward to that. Then we get Tormund heading back to the north and Jon sends Ghost with him.
Yeah.
So many people are upset about this. I agree. I think it's stupid. You've got a creature that is built for war. But yeah, I guess he'd be happier in the north.
Yeah,
he didn't even go up and pet his dumb dog. His great dog. I didn't mean dumb.
Well, I mean, this is the thing that it didn't bother me at all because if you've been watching the show for many, many years, and
he's barely
you're here,
interacted with
who
that
the
dog.
Fuck is Ghost? Who is this fucking dog? Who gives a shit?
This is
what are you talking about? Like,
because here's the problem, though. It's like they really didn't. I think maybe it was Tom that tweeted something about this too, and I agree with him completely. They set up these direwolves.
Yeah, they're pointless.
But they set them up as this incredible creature.
They're very special.
They're a special
their
creature.
Their links are special.
It's
they're,
a
yeah.
big element of the fantasy part of the show. And it just kind of feels like more and more they're like, let's just wrap up these fantasy things that
right.
cleanly and like get to this other stuff that we that it's more straightforward.
Right. It's a little more character based, and, a little less mythology based.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe he'll show up again because even as he's saying goodbye to Tormund, you know, John says this is farewell then. And Tormund says, you never know. You know, I wish I was going with you. Maybe John ends up back in the north. I don't know what happens.
He's gonna not be the king.
I guess.
He's gonna be the king, but he's gonna be like, we shouldn't have kings. No more kings.
No more kings.
This throne is destroyed. We're gonna burn it down.
We're gonna have lots
anyway,
of kings,
I'm gonna
and
go
all
live
of
in the north
kings
and be happy.
Are gonna fight in the future.
But like the direwolf thing is, it's just like even towards the middle of the season, I remember people talking about the direwolves and
well,
like
he
ghosts
even around
and stuff.
Last season.
He's not been around for almost the entirety of
and
this
it's,
show.
And it's bad writing. I
Every
mean,
time they bring up the dogs, I'm like, who gives
I
a shit?
I understand those they're expensive CGI creatures, but like it's an important it could have been an important part of the show, and it would have made the show better if those elements continued to be
yeah.
tied in.
They introduced it in the first season and then dropped it.
Yeah.
So like the fact that he's like, go live in the north, to me is like, okay, I did not care about that creature.
Yeah.
I wanted to. I really wanted to. They had a lot of opportunities to make me care, or even yeah. think this direwolf had a personality of its own.
Right.
Because that would have been interesting. Like,
absolutely.
Okay, each one has a personality and each, like, you can recognize them when they appear in scenes, but then
yeah.
it's like, all right, you're just a wolf. All right.
And then we say goodbye to Sam. Seems like that's probably the last time.
Is that the end of Sam?
It might be the end of Sam.
I thought he was going to be like a special wizard boy or something.
I don't know. Like, I certainly hope. Again, Russ show that doesn't have enough time to give all of the characters their proper. I mean, maybe not. Maybe we'll see something from them in the future, but it doesn't. I don't see how they fit in. I'm glad someone finally acknowledged that Gilly is clearly pregnant. She's been pregnant for the last several episodes.
Yeah.
You didn't notice either, did you? I did right away.
It's too dark. Scenes are too dark.
The plus side of this is maybe this is the only happy ending we get in the show, is that they are having a baby and are
right,
going,
and
have
going
to
off.
Live their lives. So selfishly, I want them to be involved. But do you, babies. Enjoy
yeah, go
your
take
life.
Care of the babies. It's just the thing that they seem to be doing with, like, ignoring the magic and ignoring the mythology, ignoring the special people, ignoring the, like, this prophecy. And
right.
this is the special boy who's going to do this. Or, you know, we'll talk about it and maybe he'll defend somebody and then go off.
And then we get the first of two scenes that could have been one between Tyrion and Varys talking about Sansa's secret that
the
she
revelation.
Told the revelation, thank you, of John. And this is where that moment came in, where it's not a secret anymore, it's information.
It's a good line.
It is a great line. I'm glad we've got a little bit more Varys happening now, because I'm more interested in Varys and Tyrion than other characters.
Mm.
And, you know, Varys predictably immediately starts pushing for John to be king, you know, rattling off his accomplishments. Maybe they can get married. She's her aunt, all this stuff. For the sake of time here, I'm just going to also lump this together with the other scene where, if this was the beginning of him thinking that through, the next scene is the end of it, where he's like, no, I'm going to do what's best for the realm, which I agree with.
Sure.
I like that there's somebody that actually cares about the good of people, but he is very much somebody that flip-flops. He's a schemer.
Very consistent,
honest
person who's necessarily done great things.
He has
despite
tried
his intentions.
He's a real politician. It's clear that Tyrion doesn't inherently disagree with the points that Varys is bringing up, but also this was the greatest honor of his life was being made Dany's hand, and he's going to fight for her.
He's also doing his best to avoid, like, real disaster.
Right. Like, he's kind of like, let's just get this taken care of and then see what happens, and we can figure this out a bit more. There was an interesting conversation that some people didn't love, but it felt real, you know, talking about just the fact that John has a cock and the lords of Westeros are more likely to accept him. I think I'm bringing all of this up to say, is Varys going to get burnt by the dragon? Because last season she'd said, if you betray me, I will have my dragon kill you.
That's forget I was talking about this with. That seems like the most, the logical, most appropriate, most expected end for Varys specifically, right, is getting burned up by a dragon. And again, it's like, it's not like, oh, like giving the fans what they want. No, you just do it and then the thing happens, because yeah, that's how things happen.
All right. Anyway, in the middle of that first conversation, they get interrupted because Bad Matchbox 20 shows up and shoots.
Isn't Matchbox 20 Bad Matchbox 20?
No, Matchbox 20 was fine. All right. But, you know what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about.
And they shoot Rhaegal. I lost my shit on this scene. I could not watch. I cried out and I left the room. I was so shocked. Then they shoot all of her ships. Mm. Everybody's wrecked.
A lot of wrecked stuff. Yeah.
Somehow get on to shore, even though we see Tyrion presumably die, but he didn't.
Yeah, when he gets jumps hit in the gets head. Hit by the hand.
But I mean, that's crazy. And so everyone miraculously makes it to the shore, except for Missandei. And then everyone miraculously knows
weird kidnapping of her.
It's all bizarre. Yeah. And this is another thing where it's like, maybe you could have shown us a bit more of that. I understand that there's some sort of surprise element that's happening, but like, how did they even know that they were going to be sailing then? Was there a raven saying, like, we're on our way? Was there a raven saying, maybe they just were patrolling outside Dragonstone? It's just, again, another rushed thing where you're like, there were some pieces that were missing. And I guess they just ended up getting her.
Right, getting her specifically and only her specifically.
Everybody knows. Everybody, yeah, instead of thinking the logical answer is she drowned.
Right, right.
They're like, they have her. I know it. Yeah. Like, again, was there a raven? I don't buy that. If there was, can we see it? Mm. Interesting. Just pointing that out.
I mean, most shows shouldn't end with 6 episodes only.
I know. A lot of criticisms. I love this show. Yeah. I'm having so much fun doing this. But they're just, you gotta say some things.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, we've talked about, like, it got noticeably worse when it had to veer away from the books and the showrunners had to take over a lot of the characterization and the writing. It got better this season because satisfying things were happening, but it's still not as good as it could be, right, because it's not presented in the way that it should be.
We see Cersei, finally see Cersei. It's been a minute.
It's been a while,
Reveal that she has Missandei. She tells Euron that the baby is his. Mm. Oops, that's a lie.
Citation needed, seriously.
Citation needed, TMCR. And then we have another war council. Varys tells Dany she can't just take the city. This is going to be a huge mistake, that these are the people that you came here to protect. You don't want to become what you've always said that you wanted to defeat. And she says something that really stuck with me. I am here to free the world of tyrants. That is my destiny. That's a real tyranty thing to say. It was like real scary. And she's got that gleam in her eye. People keep talking about that, the lighting of this episode, that there's lots of moments where you're like, oh, here comes the Mad Queen.
Yeah. A lot of demagoguery coming around.
And that's one of them.
That was good and very telling. And like, obviously, like, you know, and he points to it later about what that line is indicative of. But like, I was practically waiting for her to be like, I would burn every last one of them for the throne, you know, like, basically. I'm glad that they are not going that on the nose with it.
I am too, but it was pretty close.
And
then that leads us. So Tyrion's like, one last thing, let's try to have a conversation with him. And she's like, yeah, we'll have that conversation just so that people know that we tried.
Right.
So then we get Dany and crew outside of King's Landing, and Cersei and hers are on top of the wall. Tyrion tries to reason with Qyburn, saying, let's save these people. Yeah. Like, you don't want all these people to die. The thing is that they do. Want that, and Tyrion knows that. But Qyburn responds that either you guys surrender or Missandei dies right now. She was toast no matter what.
Right.
Like, no matter what. And I don't know. This scene, it was fine. It's definitely reminiscent of Ned's beheading in the first season. I'll say Tyrion's very fucking brave.
I was going to say that.
He just walks right up there.
That was one of the if not the bravest thing he has ever done on this show.
It's certainly one of them. Or the first time when he walked in to try to implore her in last season.
True.
He went to talk to Cersei. And
also,
again,
he killed his dad. He's done a lot of brave stuff.
He's very brave. But this was incredibly brave.
This one was like, oh my God, Tyrion, she's going to fucking
and
shoot you dead.
And I think it's so
dead,
interesting
bro.
That she keeps having opportunities to kill Tyrion and she keeps not doing it.
Interesting, isn't it?
And, you know,
her little baby brother.
He implores her. He's like, you're not a monster. I know you aren't. I know how much you love your children. Please, your reign might be over, but you can live and your baby can live. And you see that moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know
that
she's not going to listen, but you see that she wants to.
Right.
And that's so interesting. And then she does it. She says to Missandei, now's the time for your last words. Missandei shouts, Dracarys.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, myself included, thought maybe Drogon will show
up right now.
No such luck. Missy lost her head.
Sorry, Missy.
And Dany got that light in her eye again, that gleam. She's lost everything.
I'd call it
she's
a fire.
She's lost, for sure, it's a fire. She's lost everybody at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just take a step back, she should have stayed where she was. I mean, no, for the story purposes, but like, I just mean, she is a stranger in a strange land. She's got no friends. The person she loves, I guess.
Allegedly loves.
Is like a better right to the throne than she does. All of her
Doesn't
dearest people are dead.
Commit atrocities. She kind of does.
But she does. She's losing it.
Yeah, she's having a rough go of it.
Yeah.
Real rough time. All of her babies are slowly dying.
Oh, God, that was so brutal
for
me.
She can probably bond with Cersei over that, you know.
Oh, losing your children.
Losing your children and then, like, going apeshit about it and killing a bunch of people.
Just say it again, bringing up Rhaegal was not fit to fly yet and she should have listened. Also, I've seen other people bring this up, and it's an important point that I think we should highlight. She's never done right by her dragons, at least not – Drogon always was free, but she locked those other two up. And, like, then there's that scene last season when they're at the dragon pit, and she talks about how the Targaryens ruined dragons by locking them up, and she just – did that, and she never had any self-awareness of it. And these were untrained dragons that were not as strong as Drogon, and they're both dead.
Yep.
And she did this to them.
She did.
And
she, like,
you did it.
And if you talk about, like, Cersei and her children, you know.
Yeah.
She kind of
did. The parallels are striking, aren't they?
Yeah. I also, so you keep using the dragons' names and so on and referring to them, like, I was upset when this dragon died. How do they have personalities? Are they, like, different from each other in any way?
I mean,
that seems like a missed opportunity.
Drogon's the biggest one because he got to fly free.
Right, he's the biggest one, but, like, in the same way of, like, the direwolves, where it's like,
well, it's a missed opportunity.
Right, like, why didn't you? Because, like, when Rhaegal? Couldn't have told you that. They say the names of the dragons throughout the show. If they did that more and, like, had, like, oh, Rhaegal's the one that is like this, or, like, that would have made me give any of a shit about one of them dying in the last episode. And I know it affected you. I did not care because, all right, the dragon, like,
John's
one of the dragons died. John's dragon. There's no emotional connection to them other than I know that Dany likes them and that they breathe fire. A big missed opportunity in terms of making me care when the dragon dies, aside from the fact, like, oh no, we want the dragons, you know?
There's lots I enjoyed. I thought the performances were really great. A lot of really great performances this episode.
A lot
of
complaints
from
us this episode.
But there was a lot to pick at, and it's mostly just all comes down to being rushed and things feeling forced and that you don't get. But we have to accept it. That is what it is.
Two more,
That's two more episodes, y'all. I don't have a lot of predictions right now because it can go in any direction. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. I think that maybe the Hound will go next episode.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Maybe.
We'll see.
But I'm excited.
He might not go.
He might win. That's the other thing is, like, anything can happen. The people we want to win might not win.
Yeah, they're kind of like, because even also there's winning and there's losing and there's dying and living, and those are different things.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to say. With the Hound, like, I could see him just being fine. Like, he's been saved for a long time, and he hasn't done, like, the last thing he needs to do. But just because he does doesn't mean he has to die. He can just go off into the, you know.
Have you seen his brother? Oof.
I know. But have you seen Arya?
We're at the end of our Game of Thrones conversation. It was a long one because that was a long episode.
It was a long episode.
I hope you guys enjoyed it.
It'll be longer and longer.
I
and then they
don't
won't be
think
anymore.
That's true.
Really? What?
I think we've already had the longest episodes.
Unbelievable.
I know. I know. The longest episodes were in the middle.
Jesus, guys.
Yeah.
Come on.
I know.
You have a whole. You have an episode to have the whole Cersei thing be resolved. Like they need to resolve it next week.
I don't know how much they're all going to be within the ballpark, but the longest episode I believe was today's or last week's.
You got to solve the whole thing.
Anywho.
All right.
We're out of here. Thanks for listening. We love you very much.
What?
Cody.
We love you very much.